Welcome to Failing Up, a podcast where we explore failure.
Why we're afraid of it, why we try to avoid it, and the success that can arise directly from it.
Failure comes in many shapes and forms. It can even mean different things to different people.
This show, Failing Up, intends to explore all aspects. These are the stories of people who have experienced profound failures that ultimately led them to something positive.
We hope this helps us all learn and grow. Thanks for listening.
My name is Eden.
And I'm Guy. Ben Acker.
Woo!
Thank you so much for being here on Failing Up. We really appreciate it.
Yay.
One of the things we like to do on Failing Up is we like to start at the beginning. So, where were you born? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the suburbs of Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Where I was also born.
And what
went out of order.
That's fine. I mean, they both happened.
It'd be funny if you grew up and then were born.
No, totally.
That would be weird.
I would not watch that movie.
Was a young Ben a good student?
How young?
Elementary school. Dealer's choice.
Oh, elementary school, I aced it.
Okay.
I did cursive. I did print.
Oh,
middle school?
Nice.
Middle school, starting to get worse.
Okay. And then high school?
Here's the thing.
Well, this gets interesting.
Yes,
I feel like you must hear this all the time, but the classes that I enjoyed, I was great, and the classes I didn't enjoy, I was terrible.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Do you remember what you didn't enjoy?
Oh, yeah, math and science.
Yeah,
and
it's like me. I think I got a sympathy, like, C plus.
A gentleman's passing grade.
Yeah, like, well, I had a teacher who was just so nice. She was great, but she talked like Elmer Fudd. It was very, like... She killed a wabbit.
Oh.
She was just very nice.
You weren't giving a math example. You were telling the audience what Elmer Fudd is like.
I know. I'm just trying to tell you this woman was a woman version of Elmer Fudd. She was like fat and like looked like a pig a little bit. And she just felt so bad for me that I was so bad at math that like she was like, okay, here's a C+ and go have fun.
Wow.
I think I had set such a terrible precedent at math in junior high that by the time I got to high school, it was like, here's the easier classes. And I did fine or whatever. But.
And so are you taking, at least, are the classes you're doing well in, are is that English?
English and drama and...
Drama, I figure. Okay.
History? Yeah.
Ish, depending.
Ish.
And when you say you're doing, like, the classes you're doing poorly in, are is that failing or is that C's?
Sometimes. It depended on, I don't even remember. It was probably I failed some and probably I seed some. And
okay. At high school, Ben, what's he thinking about? Like, what am I going to do with my future?
I wanted to be a kid in the hall.
Mm. Okay. That was your goal.
Was
it.
That was the,
In your mind, did you have to graduate high school to do
oh,
that?
Oh, yeah.
How about college?
High school and college were never a question.
Not even a question.
Yeah.
Okay. I had that same, you know, it's interesting though. Seriously. Because for some people, high school is like, oh yeah, I did it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And then for some people, it's like, I never even thought about not going to college.
Yeah, it was, I think, a family thing. Like, my father, my parents and their generation were the first ones to, like, to do that, to go to college.
Yeah.
And their parents did not. Like, so it was a thing where, like, for sure, we're going.
Okay, so if you're doing, in some classes, you're doing well in the classes you like, mm-hmm. I'm guessing you're not going to Harvard.
No, okay. No. I got into Hamilton and should have gone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was because I did, like, a good interview or something. But I went to Syracuse, where my father went.
Okay.
Because they offered a scholarship. And I figured, oh, if I have a kid and he does nothing in high school, because my father went and I went, he can totally go.
Totally. And Syracuse is a good school.
That's a good
school. No.
Here's the thing.
I don't know.
And here's why it is a good school. It doesn't matter. It's all about perception being reality. Like, I went to Rutgers, okay? Uh-huh. I swear to God, I've gotten hired at least two places where the people thought I went to an Ivy League school. And I'm like, okay, sure, it's perception. Sure. You went to Rutgers? I swear, this one, I still remember, I worked at a mortgage company. This guy would walk around. He's like, oh, this guy went to Yale, this guy went to Cornell, and this guy went to Rutgers. Mm-hmm. I'm like, if they know better, then I look like an idiot.
I think you were the third joke. Like, you were the rule of three.
Yeah.
And they're like,
because they didn't want to go with, and this guy didn't.
Right. No, I swear he thought that was an Ivy League
school. And this guy went to trump you.
It's the same thing with Syracuse. Like, you hear Syracuse, you're like, oh, prestigious school. So it doesn't matter if it was really, but why wasn't it good for you?
It turned out it was all right. I was in the arts school, and it was in film. I was a film major, and that year we were top five film school things,
okay.
And it was, or those years, I guess it was a couple, but it was just, it was real mediocre educationally a lot around us. And also it was cold and terrible. Like, it was a real frat school, and that wasn't my scene. And it was, oh, it was just,
I mean,
it was
DC,
it was though. 6 hours from anywhere you'd want to be. Yeah. It was 6 hours from DC. It was 6 hours from New York City. It was 6 hours from Boston. It was 6 hours from Utica.
Oh my gosh!
Which is, it was 45 minutes away from Utica, but it took 6 hours.
But you say
you get there and they make you wait in the car.
But right. You grew up in DC. It's not like you grew up out here in California. It's not that much colder in Syracuse, is it?
They have something called lake effect snow.
True. Okay.
Which involves it snowing over the nearby lakes.
Right.
It's not cold enough to snow. It's cold. It's terrible. It's bitter. But there's a wind that's awful, and it blows the snow in. So it's not snowing vertically.
Where you are.
It's snowing horizontally at you. Like it's mad
eye.
At you.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I lived in Columbus, Ohio for a while. You know,
you
Lake
did?
Erie. Yeah, it was terrible.
Gross. Why did you do that?
For a job. I worked.
Was it an awesome job?
It was. I loved the job. I ended up working at the company for 10 years.
All right.
I really did not like living in Columbus, Ohio, though.
Did you live in Columbus for 10 years?
No, I lived in Columbus for 2 years.
All right.
Year and a half, 2 years.
But you had the job for 8 more years.
Yeah, I lived in California. They moved the position out to Columbus, and then they said, you're going to be a manager when you move out there. And then when I moved out after like 8 months, they hired a manager. And then I went in and talked to my director, and I said, you know, you could have faked interviewed me, and at least I'd feel good that the other guy got the job. And then he said, we know what you can do, guy. I said, okay, cool. So I went back to my desk, I made a phone call, and a week later, I had a job offer at the same company back in California, and I moved back out a month later, and everything went well from there.
Okay.
It occurs to me that if your name was not Guy, that would be real patronizing. We know what you can do, Guy.
Right. Well, I think that's probably how he meant it anyway.
He's
we
know what you can do, Guy. Yeah. Guy.
Yeah. It's difficult. I grew up without a name. I grew up with, you know, I was sexed, and then my parents moved on. Right.
Fair. Like,
I want to be a girl named Guy.
No.
Yeah, I do.
You don't even want to be a guy named Guy. For the
I had
part.
A friend who had a fish named Dog. And a dog named Fish, and I thought it was brilliant.
That's good stuff. I had a fish named Dave Goldfarb.
I had a cat in college named C-A-T.
That's
I'll
dumb.
I'll stop right there. Oh, that's dumb. Okay.
Yeah, you found the line. You found the line, you dumbed that's it. Dumb. You just dumbed the line.
I didn't even
the
name the stupid thing. Okay, so you go to Syracuse. You graduated from Syracuse.
Yeah. Totally got out of there.
With honors. No.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe. And then
Syracuse
what
honors.
Is your What year did you graduate?
98.
So, and then... Is your one of your first jobs out of college going to Will and Grace?
That was one of my first. Yeah, my roommate at the time, who was a Syracuse grad who did I guess better than I did, got a job on Will and Grace, and then instead of giving it to him, they gave it to somebody's nephew, and then they called him 2 weeks later and said, "This guy's terrible. We need you," but he had already gotten another job, so he said, "How about my roommate?" And they said, "Sure, if you like him, like he did such a good interview." So I went in and got a job I shouldn't have gotten.
Wow.
And it was great.
That's amazing.
It was a great time.
That's really rad.
Fate, right? I mean, that's...
Sure. That's definitely fate.
Well, it sounds like, you know...
How else does something like that happen? That's
well, I don't... Amazing. I mean, like, what's the... I don't know. What's the... I mean, if you're defining fate as the things that happen...
Yeah, I guess, right? But no, yeah. But I mean, it just seems so... Like, because why would they just say yes to you? And then, obviously, you had the skills to make it work, because if you didn't... They would have kicked you out like they kicked out the cousin of whoever.
Which they eventually did. I mean, it wasn't skill-based, I guess, but I stayed there a season.
Yeah.
Like, I think ultimately it's fate because I get to talk about failing on a podcast, and I think that that's like a road to failure was my Will and Grace experience.
It was.
Culminated in my Michael Richards show experience.
Right. That came right after Will and Grace.
Yeah.
So Will and Grace was a failure to you, you're saying?
No. Like, Will and Grace...
No, I mean your experience on it. No,
my experience was fine. It was. It had good and bad to it. And then it put me on the Michael Richards show, which is, I think...
How did it put you on the Michael Richards show? Was there like a showrunner that was working on it that was from that show? Or was some kind of
crossover? There was a talk of my going into the writer's room while I was a PA. And then like working my way towards being a writer's assistant. And then that did not happen. And so my boss, rather than have someone who like was kind of led to believe a thing and it didn't really come to fruition, he's like, let me put you with all these Seinfeld writers, and got me in to... the Michael Richards show is theoretically like a positive place to go.
Yeah.
Right.
And I got an agent out of the Will and Grace program. That was good.
That's good.
He was getting us meetings.
Good.
During the Michael Richards show. So getting to have a first shot at Hollywood.
But your experience on the Michael Richards show?
Oh, man. A lot of nice people.
Yeah, nice people. Was Michael, I assume, you worked
with? He was totally a person.
Yeah. Okay.
I say that, but it's not true. He was, like, he was detached from stuff.
Not engaged.
Not engaged.
Okay, so you can't really say he was
bad. It's not like he was a pal of mine or anything. Like, right. I saw him every once in a while, like a mirage or something. And it was really an intense place to be. We had at some points 3-hour turnarounds. Like, it's 3 a.m. Go deliver these scripts. They're finally done. Drive all around and deliver these things, and then be back by 7 with bagels.
Wow.
I got a sinus infection, and my grandmother was like, "I'm dropping all the pills. Like, I don't like my medications. They're making me crazy. So I'm stopping taking them. So if you want to come say goodbye."
Oh no.
This is the time.
Oh, poor thing.
So I flew across the country with a sinus infection, which is terrible.
Yeah, I hate flying with like a disease. It's
so
bad.
I ended up, having this thing where I was mostly I was just congested to the point of I can't hear anything, and they had to, they couldn't just pause my employment, so they fired and rehired me.
Oh my.
And so I didn't know. I'm a dumb kid, and I fill out the form for being rehired by Warner Brothers like weeks after I've already been working and working and working, and I don't, like, I'm working, it doesn't matter, and I'm dumb. So I filled it out the wisest, assest way.
Oh, no.
Like, what was your last job? The one I'm in.
I totally would have done that, though. I feel
they called for my head, I found out.
Oh.
And the thing is that meanwhile I'm getting, like, I'm going to this otolaryngologist, and getting the most painful thing that's ever happened to me. My eardrum's punctured and the fluid drained.
Oh my god. I've had that done before. It's
that's
horrible.
A real thing?
6 times each.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Eardrum.
They punch. Wait. They can puncture your ear and it self heals, obviously.
They give you a shot to numb it and then they go in. And
it's kind of like the dentist when they fill a cavity. They numb it first. Yeah,
but
it's
awful. That's your eardrum.
And so I'm going back and forth between my bosses and the doctor, going, the doctor would say, like, the human body needs sleep to heal. And my boss would say, tell the doctor his job is to fix you.
Oh my god.
Like, that's terrible. Mommy, daddy, don't fight. And
I know.
So I ended up getting surgery.
Oh god.
Got tubes in my ears like a kid.
Oh my god.
And it wasn't until later that I realized why you don't mess around on paperwork with HR, because they did not restart my insurance. So that was a thing.
Oh my gosh. So what happens? Do you have to actually pay out of pocket, or really? You have to pay the whole thing out of pocket.
Yeah.
That's,
oh my gosh.
Wow. But does that mean that you weren't rehired, or it was just a snafu?
Oh no,
that
was that was a thing. It was a snafu. I was rehired, but then they were like, "Oh, we have to do the insurance." So, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
That, and how old are you at that point?
21, 22.
No way you can afford what just happened then.
Well, my early 20s were devoted strongly to getting deep into debt so that I could force myself to get a great job to pay my way out of debt.
Right.
So whether it was surgery or, I mean, it was not a big surgery, so it wasn't like crazy, but still it wasn't a thing that was on my list so much as like a big TV was.
Right.
But I was getting into debt by any means necessary.
So it sounds like back to the Michael Richards thing for a second, not the greatest experience, right? Fair to say. Maybe?
Fair to say.
When you heard the news, 2006, I think it was, when he, you know, went to a comedy club and maybe said the N-word a few times, was that a surprise to you?
Yeah. That was
it
not.
Was.
Oh, really?
That wasn't the environment of that show.
Okay.
Like, it wasn't that.
It wasn't that he was an out of control character. It was
he was
just detached.
He was a guy who had been making millions of dollars for years and years and years.
Yeah.
Kind of used to being babied, I think. Everybody was used to being nice to him and he can get what he wants, type of thing.
So then are you just like secretly like cursing him behind your back? Like, fuck
no,
this
no,
guy, man.
No.
Oh, wow.
No, I didn't have enough of a relationship with him to really like
feel anything.
Yeah.
Huh.
Like, he was a weird guy at work that you'd sometimes see.
He's like that weird guy.
Yeah.
You sometimes see.
Yeah. But it wasn't like, it wasn't like he and I had any kind of, like, I remember the 3 times we shared a space together.
You know, this is so interesting. Guys are like that. Girls would have all these stories in their heads about why is he like this and why is he weird. Guys don't have any.
I was an office PA and he was on the stage. It was like a different world.
Guys are so
different
practical.
Worlds.
I love it.
But like, there was... This was Survivor time, and like the stage director and I would. She worked on Buffy, and I was a big Buffy fan, so I'd pump her for Buffy stuff. And then she called me because Sue Hawk from the first season of Survivor was on DAG, the other show that shot in our little building. She's like, "Come meet Sue."
Oh, so I got to meet, I remember Sue. Was she like the old lady?
Yes.
Yeah.
I got to ask Sue.
How? Why was she on that?
She was on DAG, like a guest spot, because Survivor had just aired.
Oh, yeah, wow, that's so weird.
And I got to ask Sue, based on what you know of me, which is nothing.
I rooted for Sue.
Do you think that Colleen would go out with me? And she said, well, you seem like a funny guy, and she likes funny guys, so you got a shot.
Oh, my gosh.
That's all I needed. Thanks, Sue. I met Sue and Posh Spice that year.
Wow.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Who was better? Sue? Like, who's more exciting? Sue?
Who was a better
kid? For you.
For me, it was Sue. Yeah, because Posh was like, oh, hello.
And that was that.
Oh, hello. Yeah. I'm going to go not eat now.
And that was when the Spice Girls were probably pretty big, too. So
No,
they had broken up.
They broke up like in the 90s. They broke up in 1999 or something. I know this because I'm a Spice Girl fan.
Me too.
Spice
World was a great movie.
I think it's so underrated.
I think it could have been handled differently, the next Rocky Horror.
Totally.
I think people could go to it, midnight screenings, dress up like Richard E. Grant, totally. Like a Spice Girl.
And bring props.
Right.
Right when Shout the scene back comes
at the scene,
out.
At the screen.
Yeah. Like when they have lollipops in their mouth, they have lollipops. I totally.
I just want to make sure I got that. You said a great movie.
Yeah.
It's a great movie.
Wow.
I think it's
I've
so
never
underrated.
Seen it, so I shouldn't judge. You know, all I can do is judge the book by its cover.
You know how like sometimes you're sick or you're like, or you don't feel like doing anything. You want to watch something on TV. And, like you can't watch like, The Leftovers.
No, right? You got to watch Band of Brothers or Hairspray.
No, you got to watch Spice World.
Yeah, that's
it's
right.
So light and easy to digest. Mm-hmm. It is the cotton candy of movies, and we need that cotton
Next
candy.
Next time I'm sick, I'm going to try to watch some Spice World.
I wonder if it's on Netflix. I'm going to Google that later.
That's
anyway.
What I'm thinking. I mean, I'm not going to pay for Spice World or anything.
You know, I would.
No, Ben did say it's a great movie.
It's like, a great movie. It's a great movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know that I want to ask what the criteria is for a great movie.
Way better than Suicide Squad. Way better.
Okay, I didn't see that either. See, that's my big problem is I just don't see enough movies.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And so I end up sitting here clueless when people start.
You guys see Colossal?
No, is it good?
Yeah, go see Colossal.
Okay. I've been feeling, especially after the Oscars, I feel like there's like a little bit of a lull of good movies.
I feel like there's so much out that I want to see.
Really? Like what?
Trainspotting 2? I like Trainspotting a lot.
I love Trainspotting, but
And it's the same, it's Danny Boyle even.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
But aren't sequels always a little bit disappointing for the most part? You're not disappointed by sequels.
I feel like they're better now.
You know what? Godfather 2 is better than Godfather 1. So.
And then Godfather 3 was not as good.
Yeah. Okay. The third one's a charm.
That's the Godfather.
No, like, didn't something just come out that was a sequel that was so much better? Callers.
Oh, John Wick.
No, John Wick was not. People like it better.
Huh?
I liked the first one.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't see either. I just heard things.
It's popcorn. It's for when you're sick.
Okay.
But with a lot more guns.
Really? Okay. Okay.
It's pew pew.
So you leave Michael Richards show in what, 2001? Is it a year?
That sounds right.
Okay, because it started in 2000.
Oh, no. It did not last a year.
Oh, it didn't?
It lasted months. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And then you just get canned?
Everybody did.
Oh, the actual show was over. Yeah. Okay. And
it
so
did
what
not
do you
make
do?
It a season. Like it aired maybe an episode or two.
Yeah. And did you know? Like, did you have an idea it was coming? The cancellation.
Once they canceled it, there was like a big shift in every like. Let's make sure that this person gets an episode. Like it canceled before it was,
gotcha.
The plug was pulled.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So we knew in that they told us, but we didn't know that it was going to get the X.
Right. And then when it happens, do you freak out or are you like, this was an experience?
Freak out like
oh my God, how am I going to make money? What's my next job going to be?
No. I'm way too young and dumb for like
for
planning for the future. Yeah.
For freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what happens when you...
For a while. And then I ended up at a... Is that when I ended up at an architectural conservancy?
Okay.
Totally unqualified. I was essentially an intern, but they gave a salary to... It was awful. My friend got... That was like... I should have been worried, and I didn't work for a while.
Yeah.
And then it was like, I should have a job. And then I got this job. My writing partner had moved back east. We gave it a go. We did not land anything. We came close a couple of times, but then we had been assured that we were going to write on the Olsen Twins show. We nearly got a Warner Brothers workshop thing.
Yeah.
So there was nothing. It dried up. I went to an architectural conservancy. Ended up in Second City classes for writing to supplement the skills that I knew I didn't have that my writing partner had brought to the table.
Right. Your writing partner being Ben Backer.
Nope.
Who's
close?
Okay.
Blacker. Yep. Shit. It's all right.
Hacker?
Your research team is
like horrible.
So far, really great.
Okay. So, well, my research team is me. So, how did you meet him?
College.
You just, okay. And was it, seriously, maybe this sounds stupid, but was there anything like, our names. And like, was that the first stupid thing?
And listeners, you may have, if you're a big Ecker fan, you might have heard this story, but I will tell it here because I'm a guest and I know the story and you asked the question, but we tell it a lot. It is, we were in college together. We had, I had a philosophy professor named Scotty Blacker, had a religion professor named Kathy, and Scotty and Kathy were best friends with a standing agreement to swap their favorite students, of which I was Scotty's and he was Kathy's.
Interesting.
And so Scotty said to me, if you're looking for a challenge, there is a really hard class that is interesting and engaging and is taught by this person. And I had already tuned out. I did not take it. Kathy said to Blacker, take Scotty's class. And so he did. And the three of them hung out in a coffee shop for a semester, wondering whatever happened to that guy with a similar name. So Blacker and I each transferred into the film school from the arts and sciences school. And we're in line next to each other getting the materials. And he tells them his name. And I said, your name is Ben Blacker. That's weird. My name is Ben Acker. And he said, oh, you're an idiot. And I said, sure, but...
tell me more.
what is this regarding? And he said, you should have been hanging out with us for a semester. Let me take you to the coffee shop where we live. And so then I was part of the gang, and that was it. And the weirdest part of the story is he went to high school with... He was best friends in high school with a cousin of mine.
Oh, interesting.
Who never thought to say to either of us, you know what's weird? I have a friend. I have a cousin.
That is
yeah.
weird.
Yeah. I mean, if somebody knows, like if somebody's grandfather had a friend named Guy, I know that.
Right.
So yeah. you would think Blacker Acker.
Yeah. Good, like, good oh job, God. Dan
Same
Bresman.
Same first name. Horrible. Yeah. He should
be, same first and mostly last name.
He should be fired from being your cousin.
Yeah.
He mostly.
That's pretty messed up. So you and Ben.
We were friends. We were good friends. We lived in the same house, but not at the same time. We took turns going abroad.
Yeah.
He ended up college at Emerson, where they taught him how to write TV. I was working on Will and Grace. My friend was working for the agent that represented the showrunners. So he would come to the stage for the tapings and ask me to see scripts. And I didn't know how to write TV, so I called Blacker and said, how do you write TV? He told me I went for a vacation in Boston where all my college friends were. And we wrote like three terrible spec Buffies real fast.
I was going to say, that sounds like a really fast.
It was great. I had a previous writing partner through high school and most of college that we both brought this, like we were instrumental in our skill sets, so we brought the same stuff to the table. Mm-hmm. And so sitting down with Blacker the first time, I was like, here's a big idea. And what I'm used to is, here's a bigger idea. And what I got was, so if we set it up this way and then pan off that way, that's a story. A structure guy.
Yeah.
All right.
You need that.
Mm-hmm.
And is it still that way?
No. Okay. Now we both do both. It's been forever.
So he essentially taught you a little bit about, enough about that. Now you both.
Yeah.
Because, you know, just because I was thinking, like, what I had a previous podcast that I did with my friend, and I was the guy who always edited the show, and he was the guy who always booked the show. And, like, that symbiosis was perfect for.
Yeah. Kind of what we do.
That's the same thing where Eden books the show for the most part, and I edit the show. And that's, I think, my own, like, need for control, the whole editing the show.
Mm-hmm.
But. Yeah, you guys have a different situation, a different dynamic where you actually
but it started where it
learned
started.
It. And, yeah. And so what was the first hit? Drones? Like what was the first thing that you guys were like, yes?
Huh. I mean, so I did a sketch show in his absence at Second City. Like that was the first thing I did that got on its feet. And it was a packed house and they extended the run, which they don't didn't do very often, or maybe they did, I don't know, but it was a show I was proud of, and by all measures of success there it was a hit. And then at the same time I started bouncing at Largo. I left the Architectural Conservancy for a television gig that didn't go, but it was great. I was a showrunner's assistant on an almost show, The Lone Ranger, for the WB at the time.
Wow.
And it was great. And then it didn't go because horses are too expensive. And so I floundered for a while and then got a job as a bouncer in Westwood, which was fine. But I was a regular at Largo at that time. And the bartender asked my friend, where's Ben tonight? He said, oh, he's bouncing in Westwood. She said, would he want to bounce here? He said, yes. And I got the gig.
Awesome. This is when it was on Fairfax?
Yeah.
Okay.
And there are two people there at that time who, if they go to a club, they want to know everyone who works there to shake hands and say hello. And they're like just old school gentlemanly. And it's Dave Gruber Allen and Paul F. Tompkins, mm-hmm. both of whom came to my first sketch show. And Paul asked me to write for his show, The Paul F. Tompkins Show, my favorite show in town, probably to this day, after seeing that show.
Wow. Mm.
So that was like, I don't know how you're measuring success, but I measured the hell out of success that way.
Yeah that's like the good, pinnacle.
Usually, like, when you have someone that you really, really respect and, like, admire their work and they offer you something, it's always very flattering, and it's a very good measure of your personal success.
Yeah. And then working on our show, The Thrilling Adventure Hour, mm-hmm. that kind of success was a thing. Like, it was regular. Like, the talent of the people in the show, we like to say, we did not have our Gladwell's 10,000 hours yet,
yeah,
but they all did. Yeah. And so that's a thing. If you don't have it, hire people who do, or work with people who do.
That's a good tip for someone.
And the fact is that they would not have come back month after month, year after year, mm-hmm. if we didn't earn it. Mm-hmm. And so that was also like...
That's very gratifying.
All of my external success came from, like, these people are doing this show. Mm. So...
And cool. Thrilling Adventure Hour, for those of you who aren't initiated, is essentially like a 40s radio show throwback, right? I want to say this respectfully, because I think the answer is yes, but is this an original concept? Like, when you started doing it, was it an original thing, or were other people kind of trying it?
No, it was original.
That's what I figured.
Yeah. There was a time in college where I heard that kind of thing on the radio, and I was a senior, and it was a driveway moment before you'd heard that term, mm-hmm. where I was like, man, that's really great. Wherever they're doing this, I think I might go after school and, like, see about joining up with this.
Okay.
And they were like, that was an original broadcast of a 1943 episode of The Shadow.
I was going to say The Shadow Knows. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. That's how you actually were a fan of The Shadow.
A little bit. Like, I didn't have an encyclopedic knowledge of old-time radio or right. anything, but we did
that
what we
stuck
thought
with
it was.
You.
Yeah.
Are you like a, like, what kind of geek are you is the question
comic
I want
books.
To know. Like, okay, so you were a comic book, so of course The Shadow has that mm-hmm. comic book feel. And then
in Raiders of the Lost Ark, like, the stuff that we like ripped off was the same stuff that Spielberg was ripping off, doing that kind of thing.
Yeah,
like, it's yeah.
And so, and Thrilling Adventure Hour also was a stage show, mm-hmm. and you had Paul F. Tompkins, you had Busy Phillips, you mm-hmm. had all kinds of huge celebrities, you had guests and all mm-hmm. that stuff. Was there anybody that you, like, wanted to be a guest that you couldn't pull, or guess
sure
Who would be an ideal guest for that show that you didn't get?
That we
get?
Didn't get? Yeah. That we, like, maybe could have?
Yes.
Dick Van Dyke.
Whoa.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm really surprised. I'm actually shocked.
And what happened?
What happened? Because I feel like he does stuff like this.
Yeah. We did a Christmas show for a nonprofit, and on the board was a guy who repped him, and we were like, he was offering his, like, roster.
Right. Yeah.
And we were like, Alfred Molina, Dick Van Dyke. That's who you have.
Yeah.
Hook us up.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen. I mean, like, it's Christmas time. People are doing stuff and whatever.
Still.
I think, yeah. I feel like there's half a chance if he really got it in front of him.
Yeah.
He might.
I think there's a chance.
Yeah. And then Bill Murray, you'd want.
Well, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
We almost got David Tennant, which would have been a cool thing for our audience. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was close. He was shooting his first post-Doctor Who show here. And it was like, oh, we have a story for him. We have just the right thing. Now they're shooting it in Arizona or something.
So
it didn't happen.
That's a disappointment.
Who else?
Do you have a favorite guest? Like, who was the best? Or you can't, is that not fair to ask you?
It's not fair to ask, no.
Do you have one that you were surprised by how great they were? Or that you not that you didn't think, you doubted them.
Well, it's, like, a hard thing to come into. It's a particular show because it's a combination of voice acting and acting also... reading, so
it's actually very difficult. It's a lot of multitasking.
I've heard, from and a lot of actors will come in and after they've done it once go, I get it now. And so the way I choose to interpret your question is who came in and hit the ground running and was great the first time through, like mm-hmm. got it and was able to do it. And Rich Sommer.
Oh, really?
Fantastic.
I love him. He's cool.
Jason Ritter.
Oh, I love
we
Jason.
We love Jason.
He's the mm-hmm. greatest dude.
Jason and Keegan-Michael Key is another one of those.
Really? Yeah, and I would imagine.
There was a scene where Jason and Keegan played dumb redneck brothers. And I was so happy for Jason because he was as funny as Keegan, who is the funniest person in the world. Like, it was just a great, like, hey, he's a great dramatic actor, Jason, but he's really funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, pals. Pals are good. Michael McMillan, do you know him?
I think so.
He was on the True Blood.
Yes, that's why I'm familiar.
He was one of those guys that, like,
really, yeah.
Just just gets it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what do you do when someone doesn't really get it? Is there like tips that you offer people that
do you direct?
Them?
I do not direct. My style of directing is terrible. It's like explaining the script or offering punch up. Neither is actable. But we have a director who takes people through and does that sort of thing.
And as the writer, how important is it for you, for the actress to, well, like, are you okay with them ad-libbing, or do you not want ad-libbing?
Ideally, it would come out during like a rehearsal, and we would go, that was good, do that.
Okay. But if they're actually on stage, you probably don't want it.
I mean, like, I think we were more open to it than they were. They were very respectful.
Oh, yeah.
And that said, if someone misspoke, it would, it could launch great things.
Uh-huh, that's true.
Okay.
Or like sometimes someone would jump to the next, like the wrong line.
Right.
It's actually great.
We had Dave Foley and Bruce McCulloch, which was big for me in the show. And the way that Dave at his microphone was lit, he had to make a choice whether he could read the script in the light or with his glasses.
Ooh.
Like it didn't work both ways.
Right. Wow.
And Bruce gave him a little shit.
Oh, man.
Like, it's your line, Mr. Foley.
Oh, my God.
And Dave said, I'm aware. I'm trying to navigate the script, Mr. McCulloch.
Oh my gosh, it was great. That's so good.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
I don't think it ever worked against us.
I feel like you should have, like, a compilation of all those little moments.
Yeah. And, like, if you want to edit it. Yes. I would love it. Sometimes the Tumblr audience will do, like, isolate that stuff.
Let the nerds do it. Yeah. The fan nerds
and
do
go
it.
Do it.
That's the magic
of the internet, you know. It will just happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Ben, you also have one of the big things you're known for is writing books for the Star Wars series.
I'm already known for it.
Aren't
it just
you?
Happened.
I mean, I don't know.
I'm not reading reviews.
You know. And so, well, here's my first question that I always have when I start reading reviews, and this is how I read reviews. Doesn't matter if I'm reading about Ben's book or I'm reading about a nose hair trimmer on Amazon, I go to the one stars. I want to know what the one stars say first, and then I'll go for the rest, and I'll see some five stars, and you were paid to you got the book for free or whatever. I get it, you know. Well, first of all, on Amazon, your book, is it the Resistance? Join the Resistance?
Join the Resistance.
All five stars.
Oh, thank you.
Now, on Goodreads,
all seven reviews?
Yes, they're like seven reviews. Uh-huh. On Goodreads, there are a couple that's, you know, and for me, it's like, it's all really opinion. Like, I didn't like the way it ended. And it's like, well, you didn't write it, so you don't get to pick the way
it
ended.
I am judging this based on what I wish it were.
And that's really what the criticisms are, which is really funny. But
yeah, I read a criticism like that, and I am like, two stars.
So you do, do you read the criticisms? And are you ever like, oh, fuck that guy, man. He doesn't know what he's talking
sometimes.
About. You do?
Yeah. I mean, because it tends to be nice.
You knew there were seven on Amazon, so obviously.
Well, because they asked us to get people to review us on Amazon. And so I wanted to see how far my reach extended. So I said, hey, will you please review the book? Because they asked us to ask you.
Yeah.
And my reach is exactly five people.
The funny part is I was reading it on Goodreads. You have a lot of reviews. And there was a guy, and he gave it like either one or two stars. It's a kid's book, and it's an adult in the picture. Mm-hmm. And he's like, not realistic enough for me. And I'm like, you're reading a kid's book, dummy. Like, why you should not be reviewing it?
I don't go all the way out. Like, I haven't read any of the Goodreads things, but...
See, that's what I do. Like but I said, nice I always to go to the it's a, negatives.
Well, yeah. No, I feel like the negative reviews are judging based on what they wish it were rather than what.
Right.
And you know what I really do that for is Yelp. Yeah, I always start Yelp with the negative reviews. And the truth is, a lot of the time with Yelp, I saw a negative review once. It was a one star. I swear to God, this girl, she writes this. Great food. I love it here. It's my favorite thing. My boyfriend can't stand the lighting. He thinks he's allergic to it. One star. Because we can't eat there.
Right. I liked the one.
Like, that's not a one star review.
Here's this. Someone went to the Magic Castle, gave it one star. Was like, the shows were awesome. Super cool. Cheesecake was terrible.
Right.
And I'm like, you're not going to the Magic Castle to eat cheesecake. You're going to see magic.
Did you see the show at the UCB that was all dramatic readings of reviews of the most poorly reviewed gym in Koreatown?
Oh, no. But that sounds like a great premise for anything.
Yeah. Matt Myra and Tom Lennon, I think.
That's funny. That sounds like a Matt thing that he would do.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so good.
So back to the Star Wars thing.
Back to Star Wars.
When you do a book on Star Wars,
yes.
How much... Are you a Star Wars fan in the first place?
Yes, of course.
How much... Do you need to know, like, you have to be kind of deep in the Star Wars universe, no? Or I mean, is there a historian for, like, you can't mess up, Like, do you need to know Darth Nihilus's origin story?
No,
or you don't.
Who that is? I don't.
You don't even know who Darth Nihilus is.
I don't even know it.
Oh wow. Well, I only know it because of the Howard Stern show. So don't give me any. Right. But yeah. Tough. So you don't need to go deep. And is there's
you can.
Nobody.
I mean, they give you a bunch of books that are like, here's all the aliens, here's all the clothes, here's all the like.
Okay, they
you
do
these, but what they have is a thing called the story group, which is a small handful of people who keep all the canon for everything in their heads. And so in every stage of the game, like outlining and drafts and stuff, it's submitted to your editor, but also to the story group, so that if you get something wrong, if you don't know
you
what kind of alien
Leia's
or whatever.
You left-handed, right? So you can't put it in a right.
In our first draft of our first book, we talked about, I guess it was inches, and the note was, it's metric. Right?
Right.
Like, okay, yeah. That's Star Wars. There was a line that my writing partner wrote that was somebody sassing somebody in French, like, pardonnez-moi. Mademoiselle kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And I knew that there's no French in Star Wars, but I didn't know there was no French in Star Wars, you know? So yeah. I was like, I will leave this to see what the story group says. And they just said there's no French in Star Wars. Huh. But my thought is there's also no English in Star Wars. Like, it's a long time ago in a galaxy far away.
Right.
But they call it basic. And it's like, it's a thing.
It's French can be a thing.
Is there? Yeah. And then is there that thought like...
Yeah, curlicued basic.
The other thing...
I would be thinking, like, you're going to now, inevitably, you're going to have those Star Wars geeks come up to you and be like, in book number 2, you wrote this. And
no, that's the story group precludes that from happening.
Oh, that's so
great.
So,
yeah.
That's awesome.
So how did you feel about, like, when you finished, did you feel good about it? It's a kid's thing, right? So, like,
it is,
that's
but
different
I,
than
I
anything
added to, like, I added to Star Wars. Like, it's all canon now.
Yeah.
And I came up with a symbiotic relationship in it, like a science thing that I was like, I am glad of this.
Huh.
I'm excited about it. We got to play with a lot of the toys, and we got to invent a bunch of stuff. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
It's fun.
So you created stuff for the Star Wars universe. So yeah. So you I mean, that's huge.
And it's 4 books. Like, the person doesn't like the ending because it's a cliffhanger, because we're going into the second book.
Okay.
And you know what else had that? Star Wars? Empire. Empire did.
Yeah.
But still, like, there's precedent.
Yeah.
I saw a complaint that was like, there's allusions to stuff that we don't really know about. Like in Star Wars?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Episode 1, we didn't know, you know, Luke's father was Darth Vader.
And believe me, every single thing that ever happened in Star Wars, you're going to see a movie about.
Yeah.
They'll cover it.
And I should say Episode 4, not Episode 1. I know that much.
I just went to Celebration, the Star Wars holiday in Florida.
Oh yeah. Was How great. Was that?
Oh, man. Such a good time.
You dig
yeah.
that?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're Star Wars, you like your Star Wars geek a little bit then? No?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean,
again, nothing.
I feel like a Star Wars geek would be like, you know what's great? All the Star Wars is. And like,
true.
I think C-3PO is annoying.
You also didn't know Darth Nihilus, so how much of a geek can you possibly be?
Like, I think that R2-D2 would be a more interesting character if they gave him dialogue.
Yeah, totally.
Right?
They needed it to cut C-3PO's, like,
you
lines and
that.
Give it to R2-D2.
Mm-hmm.
R2, stop beeping.
No, you stop beeping, son.
Exactly. What a good sassy voice they
you
needed.
Try that one.
I was pitching Gene Hackman. For R2-D2. Yeah. Like, can we get off this swamp planet, please?
Or like...
I'm a robot. It's a swamp. Come on.
Or maybe like Jack Nicholson. I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know.
Or here's R2.
Who's...
Terrible.
Jack Lemmon would be a good...
Yeah.
Like any 70s character actor. Elliot Gould.
Oh.
Not Jackie Mason,
What about
though?
Alan Alda?
Great.
Yeah.
Alan Alda as C-3PO.
Oh,
and,
you're right.
And Elliot Gould as R2.
Because he has the right body type.
You guys,
for C-3PO.
We should be casting directors.
Well, that's the thing is like, man... All it takes is editing skill, and you could make that happen,
yeah,
right? Well. Like if you took a clip from Star Wars and put it on YouTube and looped in Alan Alda talking.
Get on that too, nerds.
Yeah.
And then send that to me and put my name on it. I want to take credit for that one. It sounds really
yeah.
Really cool.
I feel like you came up with it mostly.
Yeah. Signed guy. I copyright guy. Everybody saw that. You also wrote comics or write comics for Marvel.
Listeners, call in. Yeah.
Deadpool.
Deadpool v Gambit.
Again, so like, do they have that same kind of situation?
Oh yeah,
they do.
It's different in that there's less policing.
Oh really? I think there'd be actually more for some reason.
You would think, but it's more that like for that one we were like, hey, can we use Moon Knight in this comic? And so our editor, who was in the Deadpool office, had to go ask the editor in the Moon Knight office what their Moon Knight plans were for thus and such release date. And like, yeah, we're going to relaunch Moon Knight, so you can't use him.
Huh.
So we didn't get Moon Knight.
Wow, that's
super. We got Fat Cobra instead, who is a great character.
Fat Cobra.
Yeah.
How many comics have you done for Deadpool? A few of them, yeah?
We did.
More than a few.
6 issues of Deadpool v. Gambit. We did 6 issues of Thunderbolts, of which Deadpool was a member. We did a Deadpool annual and then 2 special Deadpool one-shot story bits within. That's our Deadpool.
Is there anything that... What thing have you done? What work have you done that you're most proud of?
Man, I think a decade of a stage show where... Come podcast where, like, maybe 3 people are mad at us from it.
Yeah.
You know, like, we did good work with great people and...
Very little got along.
Was it an immediate hit? Or did it take a little bit of time to catch on?
It took a little bit of time to catch. We did 5 years at MBAR, mm-hmm. and it caught on with a certain crowd, like a small group of devoted customers.
Yeah.
Regulars, audience, let's call them. And then we moved to Largo and kind of started over and had to build our audience again. And it took a couple of months to get, like, that Largo crowd.
Largo crowd's loyal when you get them.
Yeah. Yeah. And amazing. Like,
they're the best. Yeah.
We got to meet just by dint of being at Largo. Such great.
I bet.
People. We got Ryan Johnson to direct a couple episodes of Thrilling Adventure.
Hmm.
He brought Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Emily Blunt did an episode.
Wow.
So it's like all like just like passing torches up to people and that's awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
What a beautiful thing.
Flip side. I got the best promotion ever at Largo, from audience member to door guy to working on my favorite show there to bringing my show.
Largo like sponsored your success.
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And, and straight up, Paul F. Tompkins responsible for the whole thing.
But yeah. That's
You give him full credit, huh?
Well, yeah. I mean, so, I had to work during it, but without him going, hey, do you want to write for my show? I don't know what I would have done.
So Largo was your school.
Yeah.
I mean, that maybe it was more college than Syracuse was college.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Syracuse gave me Blacker. And yeah, and that's where I learned that I didn't want to act or direct or anything. Like, that's where the writing focus happened.
Yeah. At what point did you actually, like, because it seems like, you know, and I'm kind of going back a little bit, but like in college, like, I don't know, even after college, you were kind of like a floater. You didn't have a plan per se.
Right.
Do you have a plan now?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, we're more and more strategic every day.
But. On a higher level, like Ben, mm-hmm. you Ben, yeah. not your writing partner, like you're a floater. Like where you kind of go with the way the wind blows. It feels like
yeah,
you're not like I have to do this by this point or this is my exact direction I'm going. You're like, okay, let's see where it goes. As long as it's a positive thing, I will float down this river.
All right.
Am I kind of accurate?
No, it's close enough to be uncomfortable, and I'll take it to therapy, and we'll talk about it.
Oh no!
No, Guy. in a good way. Like it's I needed to hear it.
See, I look at you, and I'm like we, you know, right before we started, I was like practically yelling at you because I'm a really excitable kind of person,
mm-hmm.
and you are very laid back. Like
I'm literally, audience, I'm literally laying back.
But it's also your vibe, like, and it's not just your vibe as a human. It's your vibe as you speak and as you tell me about your life. I just get this like, I don't know. For me, when I every second I didn't have a job any time in life, I'm like, oh my god, what am I gonna do? I gotta
just
get a job.
An anxious Jew.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe neurotic, I just need more therapy and I'll be better. But
he needs more therapy.
Yeah, that's really what it is.
It's great, dude. I just started.
It's awesome, right?
Totally into it.
What kind of therapy are you doing?
Regular kind.
Talk therapy? Yeah, no, I've done hypnotherapy, and that's why.
No, you need a therapist. You need someone where you have 50 minutes, because that's how they work, and you just talk to them on a couch and tell them about your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
That's all
but
it is.
But, I mean, hypnotherapy, you actually
that's
do.
That's bullshit, though.
Actually, hypnotherapy has changed my life. But
yeah.
The first half hour, you speak to them about what's going on, and then the second half hour,
they convince you to start smoking.
People make fun of it, but it's not what most people think it is. And, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, hypnotherapy.
People say that about stuff, too.
I can't even be hypnotized.
Do it to Eden. Hypnotherapy her.
Well, all I'm saying is,
no.
Here's the thing about hypnotherapy and hypnosis. A lot of people think that they can't be hypnotized, right? I was one of those people.
Because hypnotism's a myth.
Well, I mean.
According to that Penn and Teller
show. You might think, right? And so, you know, I thought, I can't be hypnotized. But when I talked to the hypnotist, he said the following to me, and I think this is what made me start with him, and this is what made the most amount of sense. Think about when you're going to sleep at night, right? It's not a switch. You don't just turn off and you're asleep and turn on, right? You start going down a ladder or a set of steps, right? So sometimes you stay up all night,
mm-hmm.
but you're not really awake, and you're not really asleep, right? Your brain is going, but your body's... you are somewhere on that sleep ladder. You're not all the way down at the bottom where you're, and you're not all the way at the top where you're fully awake and conscious, right? Mm-hmm. That's what hypnosis is. It takes you down that ladder to the point where you're before sleep and you're not completely wide awake. It is somewhere in that, like, when you're half awake and half asleep phase in bed and you're like, fuck, I wish I can go to sleep right now and I can't go to sleep. It's kind of like that. So they can't make you do or say anything that you don't want to do. Everybody can be there because we all get there all the time. Every single night.
It sounds like this is just someone that puts you to sleep, which is just...
But no, you're not asleep. You're
like
awake.
A meditator, like a group.
There definitely is a meditation.
Like they do in yoga, like, you know, at the end.
Well, there's a meditation kind of aspect to it, absolutely. But I personally recommend
if it works
taking
for you.
A look.
I think the question is, am I laid back? And the answer is yes.
Yes. Why the fuck do you even need therapy? What's going on then?
Oh, that's,
because of what I just said? It's my fault?
No, I still have stuff to work out.
Everyone does. If you don't have stuff to work out, you're boring and no one wants to talk to you.
That's right.
What do you think your biggest failure is?
What are my choices?
Well, it depends. Like, is there a moment in your life?
I'll tell you. I feel that this defines? Is. I mean, I think it's a gradual thing. I feel like that. I at the age that I am and the place that I am in the world, I feel like I have spent a good 10 years on a thing that I'm really proud of, and I came out from it and went, "Wow, I'm 40." I feel like I have made a muddle of the work-life balance.
Okay,
and I'm working to correct it.
You mixed it too deeply.
Yeah. Like too much work, not enough life.
I feel right. Like that's a common thing I hear a lot, especially with creative people.
Yeah.
And so what do you do specifically to give yourself more quote unquote life? Just do stuff?
Do more life.
Get a hobby? Like, do you have hobbies currently? Or is writing comic books?
Right. Kind of yeah, like that's the thing is that
that's my, the problem with
the problem is that work is
with
play.
The creative people mm-hmm. is that their work is play. So right. It's very hard for them to differentiate which one they're doing at the time. And mm-hmm. it's like if they're doing something fun, is
we
serving.
We are you not a creative?
Yeah, I guess I am, but I don't know.
I don't mean to bully you about pronouns.
I don't think I'm very creative. But anyway, this is not about me.
Do you ever struggle with the whole Twitter thing? Because I know you're on Twitter. You're
I love it. I'm great at it. I'm
knacker,
the best.
Right?
Yeah, because there's a different guy that has the E.
But you're verified.
He's a fisherman.
So, but like a lot of writers, they have a love-hate relationship with Twitter, right? Where it's like, well, I could just, why should I waste my good stuff on Twitter?
Oh,
I could
no, be writing, no, no.
No.
Twitter is great because you can put the stuff that is bothering the front of your brain
yeah,
out and
yeah.
not lose it and then get back to like, I
get
don't have
to
work this joke into this thing.
Right.
I got
but
this
I
joke
it.
Out and I have it for later. I did I wrote sketches for a public radio show called Wits. Mm-hmm. And so I'd have to pitch a bunch of sketches. And sometimes I would just go to Twitter and look at my tweets of recent and go, oh, there's 5 minutes in that.
Huh.
Yeah,
it was
totally.
A great like resource for...
It's a good little notebook.
Yeah.
Yeah,
a very good notebook.
Well, you know, now I think that
and
I
then our audience it. Is a lot of internet people, so
sure.
it's mm-hmm. a good way to like
bring in an audience.
Yeah, like keep them feeling like
they know you and engaged.
I'm there for them. They're there for me.
Yeah, that's true.
You brought up Jason Ritter earlier.
Yeah,
your bio says on Twitter has the following term. No puns, please.
Yeah,
Jason Ritter, probably the king of puns on Twitter.
Yeah, fair.
Brilliant. He's brilliant with them. Like his
yeah.
stuff is like. Probably too smart for
Byzantine.
Most people.
He yeah. does a Byzantine
right?
pun.
That's what I'm saying. So, which is it? Like, do you love Jason Ritter and
I
his
love
puns?
Jason Ritter.
You don't love his puns.
I love the amount of satisfaction he gets from his puns, and I love the work that he puts into them. And my problem with puns, since you brought it
yes.
up, is puns tend to be, from a sense of humor standpoint, they tend to lack a perspective.
I
right?
100% agree.
And for me... Comedy is all about perspective. Mm-hmm. People fall down, and that's funny to some people.
Yeah,
that's fine. That's not my teacup.
Right. I understand that.
Mostly puns are like, here's all the things you can do with words. Mike Kaplan, Zach Sherwin,
mm-hmm. yeah.
and Jason Ritter are all point of view guys
all
using
very punny.
Puns.
Yeah,
yeah.
True.
Yeah, I mean,
they're
wordy. I definitely mm-hmm. throw an occasional pun.
And puns were a necessary evil for my show. Like, we trafficked in them.
Yeah.
It's pastiche. It's mm-hmm. a thing. I once came up with a pun for the show and like, oh, hated it. And then lost it and had to the next day reverse engineer it. Like I had to remember what it was and figure it out again. It was anaphylactic sharks.
Jesus.
Right? Terrible. Terrible.
See, I laughed.
Here's the thing about puns that I said on Mike's podcast, I think. Paget Brewster was a cast member of our show. She works as a criminal psychologist on television in Pretend. One of the people that was actually that job that gave that consulted for that show told her that serial killers tend to pun a lot, which is not to say that people who pun a lot tend to serially kill, but if you are skinning people for their flesh for your overcoat, you have long since run over the Jiminy Cricket in your brain that's like, don't do that, people don't like it, that is there to prevent you from saying puns out loud. Like, that guy is like, nobody likes a pun, don't say it. And I love that it takes as a matter of course that people don't like puns. So there's a Jiminy Cricket that's like, you can think of that pun, don't say it. And you have killed him and buried him if you're killing people and burying them.
It really makes me think about my own mental well-being, because I do eventually occasionally pun. So that's really
it's not reciprocal. Don't kill people, though.
Okay, listeners, I don't know.
Don't kill people,
now
okay?
I gotta think about this.
It's not cool.
Yeah, it's totally not cool.
It's not, no.
It's not smoking or sitting in the back of the bus. Cool things.
No.
You know, the other thing I was thinking about as you were speaking, and this is going backwards, though, but it feels like you, like, everything you write for, not everything, yeah, everything you write for is popular, like Supernatural. I've neglected that 2011. That's a huge cult following.
Sure.
Is there anything intimidating about writing for a show like that? Or like you didn't do Buffy, but like a Buffy, it has that same kind of feel where it's like, these people are crazed, just like Star Wars. Though,
oh,
I guess,
you mean
right?
For the audience thing?
Yeah.
Oh, we joined that show in the beginning of the seventh season, and the end of the sixth season involved their most popular character going mad with power, like killing all of the angels in heaven and stealing their power and clearly becoming a bad guy. And we were the only writers that really tweeted. So we joined the staff season 7, and the audience is going crazy, and they have no outlet. They have nobody that's listening to them. And then they find us, who have no power.
Yeah.
As just recently hired writers. Like, and their hashtag campaign to save Castiel, like, we couldn't speak to it. And then we found out that there was a fan who worked for Homeland Security. And all I could think of was, this is going to be a sequel to Misery. You guys are going to kill Cassie, only because we're the tweeting face of the show, we're going to end up in Guantanamo
right.
Bay.
Oh, my God.
But also a really good sequel to Misery.
Right.
But so, I'm sorry, maybe I didn't understand. So I was scared that a campaign to bring him back. The other writers on the show did not know about this, or did you guys make them aware of that at all?
We talked about it. They didn't understand what Twitter was.
They didn't care.
And that's what I was going to say. No, and nobody cared. Like, that doesn't affect.
If you're not on Twitter, you don't get it. You know.
That's true.
You know this.
But we have had some people who write, and they're like, "Oh, well, somebody recently that I asked, and they're like, yeah, I've actually thought about changing some stuff because somebody on Twitter gave me a really good idea, kind of thing."
Oh, interesting.
Who was? Oh, the affair. It was the
Sarah.
Yeah. But yeah, she said like, "Oh, I would have totally written this in, but they did. You know, they." Talked about it after I'd already written the show, but it was a great.
Oh, and you can't, like, I know a lot of TV writers will say, please don't pitch me any ideas because we can't use it.
Yeah,
like,
you
will sue us.
It's terrible. Yeah.
Do people pitch you ideas?
No.
Give you their scripts?
No. No.
That's good.
There was, I went to Portland once on a vacation, my first vacation in a long time, and I have friends in Portland that I hadn't met yet. I had, Twitter friends, and I told them, I'm coming up to Portland. There's a comedy festival. I know some people. I'm going to do this. I'm going to take a vacation. While I'm there, let's get a cup of coffee. And this woman, Jen, said, if you don't have a place to stay in Portland, you're welcome to stay with us. And she and her husband both write comics and are great at that and are great people. And I said, that's very nice, but we are strangers. And she said, you don't understand. Our daughter is your biggest fan. If you stay with us, we will be rock stars. And I said, of course I'm going to stay with you. And so we went out to dinner at a barbecue joint, and Dash told me everything that she liked about the show. Like, rapid fire. She's 9, 10, 11. And it was the coolest thing in my life.
Yeah.
And then we went back to their place, and she's the one that pitched me ideas. She's like, you should do this, and you should do that, and you should do this, and these characters I've never met before. You should totally make those characters meet.
Oh, my God.
And I,
poor thing.
And do you want to see me dance? And I was like, sure. I can play the piano. Bing, bing, bing. And I told her, I'm not going to write those things, but if you want to hear them, if you write them, I will make the actors do them.
Wow.
Called her bluff. She did not write a goddamn thing. She's more of an actor than a writer.
Interesting. That's really interesting, though, to, you know, that she had that level of depth and, you know, could kind of give you that. But, and none of it, but, I mean, I'd have to think that some of it was like, oh, crap, that's actually a really good idea. Like, sure. how do you stop yourself from...
Oh, I would see stuff on Tumblr that was like, that's good, let's...
Not read the rest.
Yeah, some of it is that. We don't read the fanfic.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to see our characters kissing weird. But, like, sometimes they would, like, get ahead of the story and it would be like, no, we're going in a different direction. We already were, or that. Like,
that's good.
Sometimes they will come up with, like, whole theories about stuff, like the way that Martian emotions work or whatever. I'm like, that's great. If we ever get into it, we should borrow liberally from this. We should put them on the payroll.
Okay, so that was going to be my next question. So if you do take something from somebody, you actually say, hey, we're going to take this idea and pay them off.
It hasn't come up.
But if that
don't
is
give
a
him
possibility.
Any ideas.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get paid here, Ed. I'm trying out loud. I'm just trying to...
But I will tell you that one of our favorite episodes came from Tumblr had a thing with skeletons that I still don't understand.
Okay.
And I was like, we haven't done skeletons yet. Let's get in on that skeleton cha-ching.
Okay.
Huh.
People have hope.
People are still Tumblring, huh? I mean, I guess they are. There was this time where, like, Twitter was super popular, and then there was this exodus to Tumblr. This shows my age already, but yeah. And I feel like, you know, there was, like, Tumblr had its heyday.
They left Tumblr.
They left Tumblr?
Now they're on Instagram, I think.
Yeah, Tumblr's no longer.
I think Tumblr is where the fandoms live.
Not as much.
I agree with you, actually.
Reddit, for sure. Yeah.
Like, I know that Supernatural and, like, Night Vale came out of Tumblr. I don't know
but
if
not
it's
anymore.
Still,
like, now it's not as... I was just talking to a friend about this, how Tumblr is like... I'm like, is Tumblr, like, they're not as popular as they used to be. Like, I talked to, like, a 20-year-old and they're like, no idea what it is.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
It's not cool with the cool, with the little cool ones.
I think every time I do a Tumblr, and I'm not sure what the verb is...
do a Tumblr. Yeah. I tumble.
I will go, did I do it right?
Did I tumble correctly? Yeah.
Do you have a decent following on Tumblr?
I don't know. I don't
think
so.
You don't know? You don't even keep
Twitter. It's not.
Is that the social media you care about the most? Twitter?
Twitter, yeah.
You care about
it's
retweets
words.
And
yeah. No, I don't.
You don't.
I don't care about that stuff. Like, it's interesting to me that like when I tweet something and the people that that favorite it or retweet, like when it turns out to be like three people from different worlds of that I know,
yeah, right, I
all
feel
respond
the same.
Like that's a nice thing where I'm like, oh, hi you guys.
Yeah. It's like it's a wave,
right?
It's
more
totally
than
totally a
and,
wave.
And like how weird that this is what hits with that guy.
Totally, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Although to be honest, sometimes I feel like I mistakenly favorite things I don't mean to.
Really?
You know? Yeah. Huh. It happens sometimes.
Let me ask you this. So it just came up in my head. So I was just thinking, like, for all me, right, one of the exciting times. One time I tweeted something totally stupid and Henry Winkler tweeted back at me and he's like, I said, I'm going on a flight or something. He's like, have a safe trip. And I'm like, Henry freaking Winkler just told me to have a safe trip. He's the nicest dude.
That's great.
Who's that for you on Twitter?
One time I did an At Midnight game where it was sad PBS shows and I tweeted declining literacy rate rainbow.
Oh.
And LeVar Burton.
No way.
That's like, so retweeted. Awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That was cool.
That's really cool. Yeah. He actually retweeted one of mine too, but I'm not going to brag on that one. He doesn't follow me, so.
That's okay.
You know, don't worry about it. It's fine. So it was the weirdest thing, though. I'm going to probably cut this out too, but I had a tweet. It was really popular, and some lady just added him on the replies. He looked at it, and he retweeted it. You know what it was? It was, this is one of my favorite, so I'll probably keep this in. It's probably my favorite tweet of all time. I tweeted, I always consult with Van Morrison before going out for a moon dance.
You've talked about this before.
I didn't at reply him. I just wrote, I consult with Van Morrison before going out for a moon dance. 3 days later, I get an at reply from Van Morrison. Okay, go. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? This guy goes and searches his own name, first of all,
I
on
bet.
Twitter.
Yeah.
And then he responded to me. Yeah, and then somebody else added LeVar Burton. I was like, hey, look what happened. And LeVar Burton then retweeted that.
Are you a Van Morrison fan?
I mean, I like his music. Absolutely.
Have you heard the Skiffle Sessions?
I don't believe I have.
Holy crap. One of my favorite albums of all time, 2000, 2001, Van Morrison, a guy named Lonnie Donegan, who was like a skiffle guy back in the day. And I think Chris Barber is the third guy. And it's just these old dudes sitting in a bar playing acoustic songs they grew up on.
That sounds
the
cool.
The best version of Sloop John B you've ever heard. It's Frankie and Johnny. It's just a great album.
Cool. Download
if you like that sort of thing. It's not big. It's nice and acoustic and just one of my favorites.
There you go. It's a great recommendation. By the way, if I didn't say B N A C K E R on Twitter, so it's Ben Acker without the E.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. one last question for you, unless you have anything else.
No.
Here's the biggest
this
question
is our
of the night.
Very intense question.
Do you have a favorite charity?
So we did a show for our Star Wars book release.
Oh, yeah, the lawyer thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And because our book is called Join the Resistance, and when we started writing it,
right, the whole
it
resist
didn't feel thing. Relevant. And like it just felt like a fun Star Wars book.
But now it's relevant.
Now it's really relevant. The second book was really hard because it's like a fine line of like, I am feeling all these feelings about the world right now.
Yeah.
Right.
But I'm writing a book for 10-year-olds.
So Darth Vader is Donald Trump, essentially, you know?
I don't know. Darth Vader is a sympathetic character sometimes. so we did this show, and we charged people to come see our Star Wars show in order to raise money for a group called Public Counsel.
They seem cool.
What's Public Counsel?
Thank you for asking. Public Counsel is an LA-based nonprofit organization that offers pro bono legal services to protect the rights of disadvantaged children and represent victimized immigrants and foster economic justice to undeserved communities. I'm sorry, underserved communities.
That sounds awesome.
Visit publiccouncil.org for more information.
Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to give $100 awesome. To Public Counsel, and in the bio, in the actual description of this podcast, there will be a link to the donate page, so anybody who's listening can also give to Public Counsel.
That is great, and I appreciate it, and that's wonderful of you to do.
Mm-hmm.
If you
is there a butt coming?
Listeners, no, oh, okay. And if you listeners want a second nonprofit to visit, Detroit Creativity Project is wonderful. Our friend Mark Evan Jackson helped beget that thing, and it teaches kids in Detroit improv as a means of coming out of shells and learning how to be a person, and cool. It just does. I don't have a written thing to read about it, but go to Detroit
just
Creativity
visit
Project
too.
Visit it, hit them up with your
we're gonna have the donate page yeah, in yeah. the bio as well, or in the description of the show as well, so.
They do great work and well
awesome.
Thanks so much
Ben,
for coming.
Thank
Ben.
You
thanks
thank
for
being
me.
On Failing
so
Up
fun.
We really appreciate it.
Thanks
and thanks for listening.
Bye guys.